Accession number 28688, Rule 3.
And we went along to Singapore. We got in the morning, and we were on a train that night going up to Kuala Lumpur. And the train was a night train, it travelled all night. And it was the first train to get through without having to be stopped by trees dropped on the track or something.
So you had no idea really where you were going, did you?
No, we didn't. We knew we weren't going to Korea after that, because we thought we might be going there. And I presume we must have guessed we were going to Malaya, I think. But I mean, just going into this aeroplane and whenever it took us, we went there as well.
So you didn't have any like lectures or anything?
No.
Before you went out to prepare?
No,
you?
No, no.
Okay. And you wouldn't have been able to buy special kit either, would you?
No, I don't remember buying anything.
Okay. And did you get any leave before you actually left?
No. Well, I was home at the weekend before I left. I must have got the weekend off. And so I could get a bus assigned from there home, you know. And I kind of half expected to be home the next weekend. The next weekend, I think I was in India, I think. Certainly I was there before. I wrote and said we would be moved out. And by the time they'd got my letter, I think we would have been in India.
So it
would
have been probably quite a shock to your mother, would it?
Well, she never said.
So I presume there wasn't any send-off at departure?
No. It was all just sort of very casual. To go to the station in Inverness.
Okay. And the aircraft you used or were used at Blackbush, was it civilian aircraft or was it military?
No, I think they were converted warplanes. There was a York bomber. There'd been a York bomber at one time. I remember it had at least four engines anyway, and it had a very high tail, and the engines were above the plane. And when they took off, I'd never flown before in my life. First time I'd been on an airplane. And the engines were really roaring up, and the whole plane was vibrating and shaking. And then I presume somebody let the brake off because it took off. And it was a very flimsy looking airplane. But it did fine, it got us there. And I remember when we were coming across India, and the pilot, he was saying that there's a lot. You'll see, if you look ahead, you'll see these cumulus clouds, great white cones of cloud. And he said, well, we'll fly through that, there's air pockets here, and the plane will drop a bit. And by George, it did drop. You could see the wings flexing. I began to hope these things never come off. But the kids were very good. The only time that the kids were making a noise or crying was when we landed. And I think it would have been the pressure and their ears that I got sore here. But it was actually, well, I had nothing to compare it with. I'd never flown an airplane before. But as I said, the thing got there fine.
And how did you feel, you know, this being your first flight? Were you frightened or
no,
apprehensive?
I don't think, frightened would be the wrong word. Apprehensive, I think. But I wondered if the thing was going to fall. The vet says she revved up before she took off. I mean, that was routine takeoff. They had the engines rolling, the whole plane vibrating. And then off she went. And immediately, because you're off the ground, she was fine. Just like any other plane.
And that aircraft you were in, was it anything like the planes that we have nowadays?
Oh, nothing like that. They were very, very basic.
Sorry about that. And were the seats quite comfortable? Or?
Yeah, they were all right. Well, as I said, I mean, it was all new. I just thought, this is how people fly, maybe. Seats like this. But they weren't the kind of seats we have today. They were utility seats would be the word, I think. And they could be adjusted. They were kind of unbolted on rails, and you could make them wider or narrower, or take them out completely. It was definitely a plane that hadn't been designed for flying passenger.
Okay. And was there, when you were speaking about the air pockets as well, were there like seat belts like that we have in aircraft?
Mm-hmm, yeah, we had seat belts.
So you were properly in as well?
It dropped as far on one occasion. I remember nearly everybody that could stood up. The thing went down there, I kind of got up. Tried to stop the drop, I think. Well, they didn't stand up, but they got up off their seats. It was quite a big drop. I've never had a drop like that in an aeroplane since. It really went bump, doing like a car hit a hole in the road, you know. It was quite bumpy, but.
So were you glad to get off the plane?
I mean, it wasn't an unpleasant experience. It was just a different experience that I had never experienced before, so I really had nothing to compare it with, whether it was good or bad or not. I remember, it was about 3 or 4 days to get out there, and it took me 3 or 4 weeks to come home, because I came home on a ship. I remember that being quite different. And again, that was a new experience for me as well.
And you mentioned Cyprus.
Mm-hmm.
What was your first impression of Cyprus when you arrived there?
Well, I had a very sore head, I remember that. And it wasn't anything that I did to induce it. It must have just been the pressure of the plane or something, I don't know. But I remember having a headache, and it went away. But it was, my first impression was the heat. It was like stepping out into a very hot room coming out of the airplane. It must have been colder than the airplane, you see. And I remember the band playing. We were only there for a short time, one night, and then we had a night in, I now can't remember whether, I think it was Calcutta, maybe we had the night there. But I remember it was in hotels, anyway.
And weren't they quite nice hotels, do you remember?
Very nice hotels. We were a bit of a waiter each. We were all in their turbans and their uniforms. And I mean, it was a very great experience for young guys like me, anyway, that had never really been out of Aberdeenshire. And we'd looked out of the window, I met a guy saying, that's the finest horse I've ever seen. It was a dromedary in a cart, you know, and the cattle, they were considered sort of, holy cattle, and they wandered about the streets, and it was just a totally, totally different scene from anything that I'd ever experienced before.
And that first one that you said, when the chap said, that looks a funny horse, what was it?
A dromedary, and it was for shafts, and a four-wheeled cart, really, and it was shafts, and this dromedary was in it. The dromedary's only got one hump, the camel's got two humps. And this was a dromedary, it was in it, it was like a camel, but just with one big hump. But it was hitched in and harnessed and pulling this cart. And again, it must have been dark, because it was peering out of the bus windows, looking at all this sort of unfolded in front of us as a new scene and totally different culture from anything that we'd remotely seen before.
And what were you thinking seeing this? Because you came from a farming community, didn't you?
Well, I'd never seen a dromedary either. but I knew it wasn't a horse. it's funny, I can't remember. I think it was just a case that everything was so much new stuff coming at us the whole time, they just accepted it. And it was just, well, that's how it is, as it were. When we're here, it was... I can't remember now what I felt, other than almost excitement, I think. It was just seeing all these new things was good.
Did it seem strange to see the cattle wandering about, you know, these whole...
Yeah. But then we knew that somebody had said that these cattle are all sort of sacred here. There's an ape in it, cattle beef, and these cattle can more or less go where they like, and they did. I mean, in busy streets, these things were wandering about. It was different. Of course, there wasn't the same vehicular traffic that there is today in this. Mostly it was tried by bikes, you know, somebody either in a pedal thing with a seat at the back and two folks sitting in it, or they were running with it. Like a trash, I think they were called. But it was totally different.
And whilst you were in both Cyprus and within Calcutta, did you manage to get any spare time within
that? No. It was a case that you go in here and you got fed and you went to your bed and you got up, and it was all sort of 600 hours, we'll pick you up and we'll, you know, on to the next, back to the airport. No, you were never on your own. We were always confined to the, as a group, you know. And I can't remember now if they all went to the same place, the hotels or not, but I mean, it was a very splendid hotel we were at. But it would have been just our little bus, it would have been, I can't remember. I remember there was always about 8 of us, and we, that seemed to be around the table, because we had, I think, about 8 waiters to look after us. And I can't remember where the one of the kids went. I think it must have been somewhere different. But I would have just been with our little bus load, you know what I mean? And then we all seemed to meet again at the airport, and we all went back on the plane. well, don't they?
Do you think it was the same aircraft they used?
I think it was the same aircraft we used the whole time.
Okay, so you got to Singapore. Can you remember your first impressions of Singapore?
The smell. We were taking on trucks to get to the station from the airport. And again, it was kind of dusk. And there was lots of cooking fires. There was a lot of trees all about you, and you could see all these little fires glowing away. And you could smell the cooking, and you can hear this cricket noises that you hear in the tropics. Again, terribly all new to us, you see. And we'd had a lecture a bit, must have been somewhere en route, about mosquitoes and wearing long sleeves at night and don't run about your bare feet. There were funny things on the ground. And of course, there was always the VD, the thing that was eyes bulging into our heads. Horrific things that could happen to you. Well, I seem to think it was more danger of dying or some horrible disease than being shot. But when we got on the train, after we'd gone through this, I can still nearly smell the smells yet, and that's a long time ago, but it was quite a distinct, not an unpleasant smell, a kind of cooking smell, smoke, combination of sort of firewood burning and cooking smells and the heat and just the general smell of the foliage and stuff. And it was quite a distinctive, that was the most distinctive thing, I think, was about the smell. And then we got onto the train, we seemed to be, there was kind of half bunks, but we were very much third class passengers. We were issued with rifles by that time, and we were had to sit at the end of the carriage in an open like a veranda, and there was always some of us sitting in each of the coaches with it, sitting there acting, I suppose it would have been as like a kind of a guard or a guide or something. We were there anyway, and we changed, of course.
Do you remember whereabouts you were issued with your rifles?
Mm-hmm. We were issued with rifles when we got to Singapore. Somewhere between the airport and the station we got. We must have gone to camp somewhere to get issued with rifles.
And do you think you were issued with any more kit there, or was that it, do you think?
Well, we took all handed in all the civilian stuff there. And I think that we had to wear civilian because India had just got her independence in 1946. And they weren't allowing any uniformed troops to fly across their airspace. So we got round that by taking off our uniforms and putting on civvies. The difference made me have a shoe. But anyway, we did fly across India in civvies. I think we maybe got the civilian clothes in Cyprus, you know. I can't remember really where it was, to be certain. Certainly went from Inverness to Blackbush Airport and wore uniforms. And somewhere between, I think it must have been Cyprus who got issued with that civilian stuff. There's one army camp really like another army camp if you're only moving through it, if you know what I mean. You're in a tent hut or a basher or some sort, and they all look kind of alike. We were not allowed to wander about in Cyprus or anything like that. We were only there. I think we were there for a night. And then we must have had about 3 nights on the stops on the road. And mainly to refuel the plane. There wouldn't have been long haul jets in those days. Anyway, the train was sort of, it got right through to Kuala Lumpur without being stopped. I think it was about the first train to get up there for a long time without having been stopped. But the train, in front of the train, there were machine guns mounted on like a goods truck, open goods truck, sandbags all on the side of it. There was, I think there were Malayan police. It was manning the guns in front of the train. Because the normal way of stopping the train was to drop something on the track, you see, and then when it stopped, they used to ambush the train, but that never happened with us.
So were you quite apprehensive by this time? You know, here were you with guards?
Yeah, and I think apprehensive is a word rather than frightened. It all looked so normal and calm and peaceful and nice-looking folk. The Malayans were pleasant people. I never could say that I was scared, you know what I mean? But apprehensive, I probably won't. Certainly when we got out of the, more out of the city, and the train was going along, and that terrible noise from the jungle, which was the crickets and the frogs, and somebody said, "What's that noise?" "A wag," he said. "That'll be mosquitoes." You could see the sleeves coming down, bricks being taken off, but on long bricks, and rumbling about in their kit, wooden shorts, you see, when we got there. it was an indication of how little we knew.
And when you said that you were third-class passengers...
Well, we got to sit in a seat, and some of us got climbed up into a bunker. There was nobody else in it there. But we used to swap around, you know, somebody had a two-hour sleep, and somebody else would have had to go at it. And we were sat outside in some of the beds. I don't know if there was a first-class compartment on it, and if there was, I never saw it. It was perfectly okay. I don't know, maybe I wouldn't have traveled so well like that now, but at that time it was okay.
And do you think you were on the train for quite some time? Or?
All night we were on the train. It was light when we got in. I think we got into a place called Tampin, I think, which was the HQ company of the Gordons at that time.
So you were actually joining the Gordons? You were actually going back to join the Gordons?
Yeah. I was a Gordon, you see, but I mean... I don't know whether it was Gordon's in Korea or not, but I don't think there was. But they would have just moved it, I suppose. But we were. It was the Gordon's that were in Tampin.
Okay. And so you came from the train, you got to this Tampin?
I got to Tampin.
Oh, Tampin, okay.
Tampin.
Okay. And was it far from the railway station? Or?
Well, it was a camp. It was just like a few, well, you saw photographs of the thing. But it was a biggish camp, because it was a HQ company, you know. No, it wouldn't have been far, I don't know how far, it would have been a few miles. I can't remember really how far. But we were picked up in army trucks. Just opened three tunnels as we got into them. And then we were, I don't know how we were allocated, but we were posted to A Company. When I got to A Camp, they must have known that I was a driver, because the rest of the guys used to do an awful lot of patrols, you know, in their feet in the jungle. Now, I didn't do many of these. I was put straight into the transport bit. You know, we had like 3 1,500-weights, 2 3-tonners, 2 scout cars, and about 3 Land Rovers or Jeeps. Either or.
What did you mostly drive?
Well, I started off driving a Dodge 1500-weight truck. And then I can't remember how long I did that. Not very long. And then I went onto a scout car.
Okay. And when you first got to the camp as well, what type of accommodation were you shown to?
First camp we went to was wooden huts with corrugated iron roofs. And that was mostly that, except we went out with a platoon. I can't remember the name of the place now. But we were in tents there. There was 5 of us in a tent. A big square tent.
Okay. But the first place, was this where the headquarters
was? Tampin was the headquarters, and that was sort of semi-permanent buildings.
And do you remember how many men would have shared that billet with yourself then?
No, I don't remember. Mostly I seem to be in rooms or tents or somewhere where there was about 5 men. But I think maybe in Tampin it was bigger. But I can't honestly remember.
And was it the same idea as it had been in Britain? Did you have your bed in your locker, or was it something else?
You had a box. A wooden box which you sat on blocks because it was damp. Termites was a big problem. You didn't want any termites to get into your stuff. They really could just be down to powder by no time at all. I don't think I was very long at Tampin. I really can't remember now how long it was before I was sent to A Company. I think it might have been just a day or two. And then we went to A Company, and we were in 10 huts there with a fly sheet under the roof, the tin roof. And the electric lights came from trees into the hut, and then onto another tree, into the next hut, and so on. And the rats used to, little rats, tree rats, they used to come along the wires from the tree, and you could see their little feet on the fly sheet, you know, sort of looking from below. You could see where they were running up, and of course, folk were out to brush and go boom, boom, and squeeze the rat against the roof. I don't think it was ever successful. But that was one of the things I remember, was that you could see the rat's feet in the flesh, it is it, run up. But they weren't a great big rats like we have here. They were sort of littler rats. They were rats.
How did you feel about that?
Didn't seem to worry them at all. No. They never came out of the sheep. Well, I never saw them running about in the... they must have come back into the trees again. But I do remember under the box, somebody was saying, it's a funny hissing noise under his box. And one guy had a snake under his box. His box was maybe a couple of inches off the ground, you see. This beast had just crawled in there. Didn't bite anybody or anything like that. But I remember when we had to pull, we thought it might be that. And I remember pulling the thing, I was standing back up in my bed, pulling the box out. And the thing wriggled out of the thing and disappeared. Anyway. I can't remember anything.
And had they told you to expect things like this? You know, were you prepared for, like maybe snakes going about or mosquitoes?
No, they told us about mosquitoes and malaria. We took paladin tablets every day. And, no, we were never warned. We were told not to mess about. There was monkeys. A lot of monkeys came in, and they were given monkeys, and they made screeching, long noises. I mean, what was that? Just a monkey, sort of. And of course, there was great. Always some guy there. I could catch one of these monkeys, and they used to have sort of lassos and things. Well, we did catch one once, and nobody could get near it. How come we release it without getting bitten with this thing? I can't remember how we did it. But anyway, it got away, and nobody was chewed up as far as I remember.
But would the monkeys have came near the hut? Would they have?
Well, they came up to the perimeter. There was a perimeter of wire around the camp.
But would that have bothered the...
No. They were more inquisitive, they used to call. We were bothering monkeys more than monkeys bothering us.
And what about this camp that you were in, where their A company was? Was that a big camp?
There'd be three platoons. So there would have been 30, maybe 50, 60 men or something like that.
Okay. And was it well organised?
Well, we had a cook called Potter, and he was absolutely... tremendous, great cook, had very good food all the time I was there, and he was high food there, nearly, or mostly food, but he cooked under him, he'd like about four or five cooks who were absolutely terrified of him, and the kitchens were spotless, and everything was painted blue or white, little bamboo canes along to the, into the dining room, which was an open covered roof thing. But when you were on the road, when I often, but a few times, I'd run down a pig, you know, a wild pig, and the scout car's in your drive, and you couldn't see the last 5 or 6 feet. You could see it in front, but you would have been going for this pig on the road, and then it disappeared, and I wasn't sure whether it had jinked off to the side, and then you felt bump as you hit it, and it was quite a bump, and of course it killed it, and we then used to pull it up onto the bonnet at the back of the scout car, because you'd always have gone with me. And it took both of us all we could manage to get the thing onto the back of the... It was a flat at the back of the Humber Scout. And we took it back to the camp, and Potter was usually off quaffing late at night. And we used to go and waken up Potter, but he banged his hat with a stick. So it was well out of the road when he got up. I've got a pig for you. And then he was delighted with the pig. And he would root out all these poor cooks who would come and would hang it up, and they would gut it, and they would scrape it, and they would cut it up and put it in the icebox. And it was a great feast to have a pig. He always welcomed a pig. I think I only did it about 3 or 4 times, but he liked his pig.
And were the scout cars quite high that you couldn't see it?
They were like a 1500 weight. No, you were sort of weight down in here with a hole just for looking out at, and the bonnet was in front. And they were higher up. Yeah, you lost sight of the pig for about, I suppose, maybe 6 yards or something like that. You couldn't see whether it had run off the road or not. You just kept going hoping you were going to get them.
Apart from when you had pig to eat, was the other food, you know what?
Well, it was good food.
And so you were getting quite a good supply of food as well?
Yeah. I don't know how it all was arranged, but there was nothing wrong with food.
What about a water supply as well?
Water supply? I'm not sure it was. It was taps. It was just taps in the camp. It must have been tapped into something from somewhere. Maybe in a well or something, I don't know.
So it wasn't a problem?
No.
How about keeping yourself clean there? Was there
well, showers, lots of showers. And you had lots of showers because it was hot. It was, I don't know what the temperature would have been, but I mean, it just what football shorts was added up. And driving the scout cars, because they were steel plated, they got very hot inside with the sun beating on them. And you could feel sweat trickling running down you, and right into your boots, and we had these jungle boots with sort of canvas and rubber. And they ran down into your legs. Your feet were usually wet, not with water, but with your own perspiration. And of course you got the, what we call tinea foot drop stuff. It was, you painted your feet with that blue Jensen violet stuff. And then I remember we had to escort something up to the CEO's house, and he had a house on the coast somewhere. I don't know where it was now. Anyway, his batman and his cook was there, and we come up with a new cook and a fridge, I think, or something. And we stayed the night, and there's a lovely beach in front of the house, a private beach, with sand on it, and I swam and ran about in the sand. And the sand and the salt water cleaned up my feet so well that I thought, maybe I'd have dirty socks on again. And I never wore socks from that day on. My feet were fine after that. It should have been in the army rules, don't wear socks if you're driving these things.
And did you get special socks for the heat or anything?
Special socks? No. Just got socks.
Just woolen socks?
Woolen socks, grey woolen socks.
Okay. But you had to be quite careful about your feet, did you?
Well, you had to be quite careful with lots of things. I mean, if you got a cut or something like that, it was very easy to get it infected. You had to keep it clean. But there was plenty of showers you could take. I mean, there was rows of showers that you were in. And I've seen, well, there's plenty of water. Just cold water, of course, but it was hot. But to be in a tank for a while in the sun on the go, in the hot, but it was, you know, warm.
And whilst you were in this place as well, were there plenty of toilet facilities? And
yeah, Tampin, I can't remember, there must be proper toilets in Tampin. But our one, we had a big trench in the ground and a post and a flat stick, and he's balanced on this thing and fired into this trench, and every now and again somebody poured petrol in and lit it up, and it was fairly plenty, but nobody seemed to be too concerned about it. It was if you were downwind of it, then you could better somebody burn some of that stuff. but the camps that we were in were fairly primitive. So.
Waste disposal as well, you know, you're speaking about the toilet.
Well, there was trucks went to the dump, and there were usually 1,500 trucks went around with somebody, and that was one of the jackers jobs where somebody would be on the sanitary truck, you go around and emptied all the bins from the cookhouse, and but it was food. You weren't emptying out any effluent or anything like that. It was food rubbish that you were taking, and it was I can't remember. I maybe did it once or twice, but I never come out of the cab. There was other folk bumming the stuff in and getting to do it again at the other end.
And you mentioned there it was somebody's job. Whose job was it?
Well, guys who might have been put on detention for something, they misbehaved or something, and you'll be on it. That was the kind of things you got. You got the peel tatties, or you got to go onto the sanitary truck thing, and that sort of it was a deterrent.
And did you give them a special name there? You know, when you first described them, did you call them something special then?
Oh, there's somebody used to say, you know, I've got a camera, it was the sort of, I can't remember what it was.
So, was there ever any problem with any pests? I know you've mentioned the tree rats. And
no, there was never a problem that affected us in that way. I mean, Potter had a pet monkey, which it was a one that used to drink beer. Very fruit from that. Screamed and tore up out of the roof. Wouldn't come down. But
did Potter come from Aberdeen?
No, he was in Australia, I think. Well, you wouldn't have known with Potter if he was. Potter would never have let his left hand over to his right hand. But he was a damn good cook. He was a sergeant cook and very good. And his great thrill was to get a pig and go and visit some of the other cooks in B Company or C Company or something like that. And I often used to drive him there with his bit of roast pig for the guys. Usually the driver back full, wouldn't he?